There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
A very good afternoon and welcome along to The Grill, live down here at Barasti, where for the next 3 hours we're talking wall-to-wall sport as we build up to one of football's showpiece events, the FA Cup final. That kicks off at Wembley at 8:15 this evening. No Tom Urquhart today, but it's myself, Robbie Greenfield, from Sports Tonight, former Rangers, West Ham and Norwich winger Dale Gordon, plus rugby aficionado turned marathon man Carl Van Rosenvelt, with you through until 6:00 this evening. Coming up on the show, we'll be joined just after 4 by Ron Atkinson, a man who led United to 2 FA Cup trophy successes in the 1980s, and none other than ARN's head of sport, Chris McCarty himself. He'll join us after 5 as he makes his way to Wembley, where his beloved Manchester United face Antonio Conte's Chelsea for that FA Cup trophy. There's the Scottish Cup final to look ahead to as well, as 3 of Europe's major domestic leagues bring the curtain down on their season. And in other sport, Rafa Nadal will resume his old rivalry with Novak Djokovic in the Italian Open semi-finals. That one gets underway in around an hour and a half. There's live rugby, there's live golf to keep you up to speed on as well. You're listening to The Grill, live at Barasti.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
A very good afternoon, then. And don't forget, as ever, you can join the conversation as well, should you wish. 4001. And I'm a little bit concerned of the level of conversation that I'm going to get out of one of our pundits this afternoon, because Dale Gordon is far more interested in what's going on with the royal wedding than he is on live sport. Is that not right, Dale?
Can you just give me about 15 minutes. I just want to see if she says I will.
Have you wiped a tear away yet? I will or I do?
I will not.
That's a very good afternoon to
good
you,
afternoon,
Dale.
Sir.
It's fair to say we are watching pictures of the royal wedding beamed out from London. The bunting is out down here at Barasti, so we're all feeling, a little bit wistful about the whole thing, aren't
we? Well, to be fair, though, Robbie, let's be honest. After the performances of Chelsea and Manchester United last weekend, I think this is the best performance that you'll get anyway watching the royal wedding this afternoon. So hopefully the game will be a little bit more interesting later on this afternoon, because obviously it's the last cup up for grabs of this current season. And yes, a great atmosphere down here at Barasti. Obviously a lot of people come in to watch the royal wedding, me being one of them. I'm not so sure if Carl is that interested in it at the moment.
Well, I'm going to get Carl's take on it just now. I don't want to make this a royal wedding special by any means, but the happy couple are standing in front of, they're ready to get married. They're ready to tie the knot. And Carl Van Rosenvelt, are you happy for them? Are you interested in the slightest with what's going on?
Couldn't care less, Robbie Greenfield.
Good man, that's what I want to hear.
Anyway, I know there's a lot of excitement down here at Barasti for the royal wedding. And of course, like anybody else there, I wish them a happy life ever after.
Well, listen, if you are not interested in the royal wedding, but you are in fact interested in live sport and sport in general, then keep it locked to Dubai Eye 103.8 over the course of the next 3 hours, because we've got plenty of live sport to discuss, Carl Van Rosenvelt and Dale Gordon. Plus, we're building up to that showpiece event, Manchester United. You mentioned it a little earlier, Dale. Manchester United taking on Chelsea at Wembley. The FA Cup taking on added significance. Could it be Antonio Conte's last game in charge of Chelsea? Will it define success for either side in a season that has been dominated in the Premier League, at least, by Manchester City? And then certainly when English football is concerned, Liverpool have been the team that have excelled themselves in Europe, reaching the final of the Champions League. But Dale Gordon, you're a man who has FA Cup pedigree yourself. You have scored at Old Trafford. You have played at the highest level in the FA Cup. Talk to us about it, because we've had this conversation a lot on Monday Night Football, Dale Gordon. It's a competition that has been well documented, has perhaps lost a little bit of its luster over the last couple of decades, but Chris McCarty, my colleague on Sports Tonight, would make the point that in recent years, due to the importance of winning a trophy and how much that can determine whether a manager keeps his job or not at one of the big clubs, the FA Cup has actually had a bit of a renaissance.
Yeah, I agree with Chris, and I think that he's absolutely right. It's, you know, over the recent years, I think Wembley, when it was knocked down and the Twin Towers were no more, and when Wembley reinvented itself as being this state-of-the-art, you know, national stadium. And don't get me wrong, Robbie, it's a fantastic, fantastic stadium. I think it lost its little bit of va-va-voom, if you like. And I think that, you know, with teams have now taken on board the importance of the FA Cup, because obviously, look, at the end of the day, there's only apart from maybe the top six teams, are going to get into the Champions League. They're going to get into, you know, to win the FA Cup. There's the obviously the League Cup as well. You know, it's a difficult cup to win. But I think over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I think top managers are now putting out their top sides, and I think today's game is an example of that, because I think that Chelsea and also Manchester United's goalkeepers over the knockout rounds, so to speak, is that they've now gone back to their number ones. I think you'll find that Courtois will start in goal for Chelsea, and I think De Gea will start in goal for Manchester United. And I think it's a squad game, and I think that, you know, players will miss out, but the importance of the FA Cup is there to be seen. And I think that the only thing I don't agree with in the FA Cup is the semi-finals. I think that and Spurs are obviously probably, I'd say, let's blame Spurs, but I think Spurs this season obviously playing every home game at the National Stadium, Wembley, gives the opportunity for players that probably will be within the end of the season going into the FA Cup final already played there. So I think, you know, on a personal point of view, you know, didn't quite get to an FA Cup final. Semi-final was it was as far as I went in the against Everton back in the day. We lost 1-0. But Manchester United, I know about Manchester United. You mentioned about scoring at Old Trafford, but also as well, I knocked them out of the FA Cup after. Just thought I'd get that one in.
Of course, Dale.
I knocked Manchester United.
I penciled in this time in the show for you to kind of walk down memory lane.
Carl, I'll let you get a word in a minute, mate. But
we'll hear from Carl just after half past.
I love Dale Joe Megan's dress.
Yeah, thanks, mate. That's enough about you, Carl. Let's talk about me for a change.
yeah, have you ever played in the FA Cup, Carl? No. Right, back to Dale.
So it was the 1990 when Lee Martin scored the winner after a replay against Crystal Palace. The year after 91 season, we played Manchester United. It was live on BBC. John Motson was who's now retiring commentator, legendary commentator back in the UK.
He had the sheepskin coat.
Incredible, yeah. And I remember Rule Fox just came on the sub. Steve Bruce, who was an ex-Norwich City player as well, just came to one. I just slipped it past to Bruce. He went round the goalkeeper Leslie at the time. Left foot finish. I can't remember too much about the goal, as you can remember, as I'm saying now. But, ran off.
You sound like Chris McCarty in a match report.
Ran off and done this disco dance, which is, like, I wouldn't say legendary around the world. I think legendary in Great Yarmouth, where I used to live. Because I used to do that every time in a nightclub, but that's another story. So that's my sort of like fond memories of the FA Cup, and I think hopefully today these two teams will go out, you know, in the National Stadium and put a performance on. I think, you know, Antonio Conte is, you know, if he wins it, is he still going to be the Chelsea manager? And Jose Mourinho, obviously ex-Chelsea as well, he will have his thoughts on winning that trophy, because, you know, and we'll no doubt we'll talk about it throughout the show, but coming second in the Premier League and obviously winning the FA Cup, is it a successful season for Jose? But, you know, then players, and also as well, Michael Carrick's first game on the bench as a coach. So, you know, he'll want to start, get off on the foot, running front foot as well, and winning a trophy. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be a better occasion than the last time these two teams played, which was last weekend, you know, Manchester United and also against Watford. I think you were there, Robbie,
at the time.
Having your prawn sandwiches, because obviously it was not that great of a game. And also as well, Chelsea losing against a rampant sort of like Newcastle United team. So yeah. Let's keep our fingers crossed that it's going to be a classic.
CVR, for you, Antonio Conte refusing to speculate on his future heading into this game, and quite rightly so. He doesn't want the build-up to the FA Cup final to be about him. And he wants it to be more about his players, and he wants them to be focused on the job. Of course, he's not going to talk about his future, but he has had the look of a dead man walking in managerial speak. He's not looked himself for quite some time now. There's a dejection to Antonio Conte in recent weeks that speaks to me that it's inevitable that he will part company with the club after this season and after this FA Cup final.
Yeah, I guess the important question is, and this is what I actually wanted to ask Dale, who needs the win more? Is it Jose? Because ultimately Man United have a very low par season than if you see the money that they spend, or is it Conte? The thing with Conte is he's actually sitting in a pretty good place now, because if Chelsea do sack him, which I believe they will, they have to play him out 2 years worth of wages, which I think is the equivalent of about £9 million. So either way, he's going to be smiling to the bank. I'm sure there'll be a lot of clubs that will be after him, but I think, Robbie, I think the problem came in for Conte this season is when the whole debacle around Diego Costa came about. And ever since that was not settled immediately, it dragged on and it dragged on and dragged on. Conte never quite seemed to be stable at Chelsea. And if you're going to ask me, come the beginning of next season, I don't think Conte will be the coach of Chelsea.
The thing is, Carl, you talked about that, obviously, with the Costa thing, and I totally 100% agree with you as well. And I think that the year before as well, we know the problems they had under Mourinho as well with the physio saga, and that dragged on. And that had a massive impact, I think, within the changing room at Chelsea Football Club, and evidently that Mourinho left. And I think Conte is the same situation. I think that you're right. The way they handled the Costa saga was a joke, really. And I think that, Diego Costa within a Chelsea team, I don't think they'd been in the position where they are now. You know, they had to go out and obviously reinvest and brought Morata in, which let's be honest, you know, sometimes it does take a player 12 months. But unfortunately, in this day and age, as we've seen in the managerial merry-go-round in the Premier League, you're not given that time. You know, have to hit the ground running, you know, and players are the same. And unfortunately, you know, it has backfired on them, the Diego Costa saga. And I think that... looking at the two you mentioned about
who needs it the most?
I think they both do. I think they both do. I don't think there's not too many margins between the two of them. I think that Mourinho, after obviously coming second and so many points behind their local rivals Manchester City and Chelsea, because obviously they were the champions last year, and now sort of like relinquishing their reins to Manchester City. I think that. You know, it's important for both managers, and it's important for both sets of supporters as well, because it's the end of the season. It will be hot. There's a lot of other things going on in the UK and in the capital. You know, like we mentioned about the royal wedding, and I think that, you know, there's a feel good factor around at the moment. I just think that they owe the fact that the FA Cup deserves, and also as well, can we mention obviously Ray Wilkins as well, who played for both teams, who passed away recently as well, and it's quite poignant that it's like become like the Ray Wilkins FA Cup final, because obviously he had his time at Chelsea, he had his time at Manchester United, and Ray Wilkins was one of the players who scored probably one of the all-time greatest goals in an FA Cup final against Brighton, where he curled it into the far corner, and I believe that his widow will be presenting the trophy today, so it's a nice touch.
Absolutely, Dale, yeah, and hear to that. Ray was a wonderful football man, someone who always gave his time very generously to us on our show. He's appeared on our show many times in the past, and he will be remembered today for the man that he was and the popular figure that he was, as you mentioned, Dale, at both clubs. When we come back, well, we're going to avoid talk of all things royal wedding. We will continue building up to the FA Cup final. We're going to be chatting to Ron Atkinson, a man who, well, led Manchester United to two FA Cup successes in the early 1980s. That one just after 4 o'clock. There's lots more live sport, though, to fill you in on when we come back.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Welcome back. It is a very warm and sunny day here down at Barasti. The bunting is out. The royal wedding is in progress. Has managed
Robbie,
to turn his
you
head
take my
round.
Hand, Robbie.
I take your hand in friendship and nothing more, Dale Gordon. I'm alongside the former Rangers, West Ham and Norwich winger, who is glued to the royal wedding, and Carl Van Roosevelt as well. There's lots of live sport to keep you across over the course of the next 3 hours as we build up to the FA Cup final between Manchester United and Chelsea. That one takes place at Wembley at 8:15. We've got Serie A football, 5 p.m. Juventus going up against Hellas Verona. They are already champions, of course, in Serie A, Juventus, and Hellas Verona already relegated in 19th place. So a bit of a non-fixture, that one, but it is the final weekend in Serie A.
Yeah, but saying that, Buffon's last game for Juventus, I think it's going to be a fantastic send-off. I mean, he's been such a loyal servant to that club, and ultimately one of the greatest goalkeepers ever to play the game.
And he's done a U-turn on his decision to retire as well. He was 40 years of age, ready to hang up the boots, and I don't know where he's going to end up. Wouldn't it be great if he came to the Premier League, Dale? Do you think a club might be interested in Gianluigi Buffon?
Well, there are reports, isn't there, from the UK that possibly, and we know that Liverpool have their problems in goal, and I think that that could be an area where he might go.
Buffon
to Liverpool or Manchester City was a shout as well. I don't think Edison, after signing his about 25-year contract last week, will have many worries about that. But I think it's one of those, Robbie. I think as a player, and goalkeepers are different. You know, they so-called the goalkeepers union, don't they? You know, and they do, because of the physicality of the game. You know, being in goals, you know, between the posts. I think that Yes, they're very supple and they have to keep themselves fit, but I think the longevity of a goalkeeper can obviously see them go on for a lot longer. And I think with Juventus and the success that Buffon has had at Juve, is it the sixth title or seventh title?
Seventh
in a row. You know, and obviously the famous game against Real Madrid, he just feels probably he's still got that hunger in his belly that he wants to continue. And why not? He obviously, because of the day and age of footballers, you know, they look after themselves. As you can see, I look after myself back in the day as well. But, you know, it's one of those ones that, he's still got the hunger to do it. And why not? There is talks of him going probably on the, possibly going on the backroom staff. But I think he still wants to be throwing himself around the goals.
Do we see him in, I'm just throwing it out there, in the MLS, maybe playing for Miami, Beckham's new team?
I think that would be a well-remunerated and quite logical move for Gianluigi Buffon, who was all set to retire, but he did have a change of heart. And he's also apologised, I should add, to Michael Oliver, because he said some fairly cutting remarks about the referee, Michael Oliver, following that semi-final in the Champions League, where Juventus once again had their hearts broken by Real Madrid. But we wait to see what the future holds for Gianluigi Buffon. Just a little roundup of some other live sport in progress this afternoon. We've got Celta Vigo taking on Levante in La Liga, Dale. That 13th taking on 15th. Levante significant, of course, because it was they that ended Barcelona's hopes in shocking style, I should add, of going an entire season unbeaten in La Liga, becoming the first team to do that in the 38-game season. But how's things progressing? That one got underway 25 minutes ago.
Yeah, mid-table clash, end of season, sunshine, lots of shirts in view as well. And I think that Levante, you've got to remember as well, Robbie, you know, on the back of that Barcelona result, unbelievable result, it really was, a 5-4 at home against the Barca. And I think that them going into the game, I think it was on the back of about a 4 or 5 game unbeaten run, and they've continued it this afternoon as well. Celta Vigo at the moment, looking comfortable, not really pressing too much though, and Levante just sitting back and catching them on the break. And at the moment, the score is Celta Vigo 0, Levante 1.
We'll keep an eye on that one as Levante lead there. Rugby, there's a lot going on. We've got Super Rugby, the Waratahs taking on the Highlanders. That one already in progress, in fact coming to the end of that game. And then the Aviva Premiership just shortly going to get underway in the playoffs, Carl van Roosevelt, Saracens Wasps.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, as you said, it is the semi-finals of the Aviva Premiership this afternoon. 3:30 UAE time, Saracens take on Wasps. And then, of course, the champions, Exeter, take on Newcastle Falcons. That game is at 6:30 kick-off UAE time. As you said, Super Rugby in full force this morning. The Sunwolves' shock victory over the Stormers. An 80-minute drop goal, winning that one for the Japanese outfit. The Crusaders beating the Blues 32 points to 24. And currently live, 73 minutes played down in Sydney. It's the home team, the Waratahs, leading the Highlanders 41 points to 12. The Sharks take on the Chiefs at 5 o'clock this afternoon. The late kickoff, 7:15 UAE time. It's the Lions taking on the Brumbies.
Over in Italy, the Italian Open over in Rome is in progress. A result to bring you from there as well. Elena Svitolina, the champion here at the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships just a couple of months ago. She has made the final. She's the defending champion of this tournament. She's beaten Annette Contevate 6-4, 6-3 in the semi-finals of the Italian Open on the WTA side. I tell you what, boys, I am looking forward to a certain tennis match a little bit later on this afternoon. In fact, during the show, because at 4:30 p.m. in about an hour's time, Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic are going to play one another for the first time in over a year, Carl van Roosevelt. And Djokovic last night, the fire was back in his eyes.
The fire is back in his eyes, in his belly. That was not an easy game against Nishikori. He seriously was struggling in that first set. But Robbie, he just slowly but surely seems to be getting momentum again. And absolutely fantastic result for him. And I think he will push Rafa. Another great result last night, of course. Or not last night, the night before. Maria Sharapova. I know you're not a big fan of hers. I know you're not. And that's,
it's okay.
That's why you didn't mention it, but I will mention it because I'm a massive fan of hers. I mean,
that wasn't why I didn't mention it. I was doing it chronologically.
He hates the royal
Roosevelt
wedding, but he's on the show.
I absolutely loved her little knock-up with Rafa Nadal earlier on in the week that went viral on social media. She's taken on Simona Halep in the other semi-final. The only reason I didn't mention that is because it doesn't take place during our show, Carl van Roosevelt. That one gets underway.
I know you got a little nigger against her, so I just thought I'll put it in there for Maria.
Well, there you go. I'm sure you will. Anyway, Maria Sharapova taking on Simona Halep. That one gets underway at 7 p.m. That keeps you across tennis, so we'll have an eye on that Nadal-Djokovic semi-final for you getting underway in just over an hour's time. Over in the world of cricket, in the IPL, and things are bubbling nicely to a head in the IPL because with one match remaining in the league season, teams are scrapping to make it into that 14 playoff come the final sort of throws of the IPL. And we've got a game in progress. The losers of this particular game are out. The winners are not necessarily out, Carl, but they'll have to have results go their way in order to make the playoffs. It is, of course, the Rajasthan Royals taking on the Royal Challengers Bangalore. The Rajasthan Royals are in bat at the moment. They are 90 for 1 off 12 overs, so not the fastest scoring rate, although they've only lost one wicket, so you back them perhaps to press the accelerator in the last eight overs. Tripathi is not out on for 54 runs off 39 balls, and Ajinkya Rahane as well have scored 33 runs from 30 balls. Archer was out for a duck. Bold Yadav caught Patel a little bit earlier on. So that's the live progress of the IPL. We'll be interested to see how that comes to a head as the teams vie to make the playoffs. And that's basically most of the live sport that we've got to look forward to. There's golf over on the European Tour, the Belgian knockouts. We're going to touch on that a little bit later on in the conversation as well. But I want to return to football if we can. Still some things to debate that came out over the course of the week, Dale Gordon. Not least the departure, not so much shocking, but in terms of a sense of injustice being done, David Moyes and Sam Allardyce. We've discussed often on Monday Night Football whether the Premier League is moving into a new era, and these guys and their like, Tony Pulis, Alan Pardew, who had a bit of a spectacular failure this season with West Brom, and those kind of managers with, a reputation for coming in and for being pragmatic and for being percentage and for saving teams. Clubs are wanting a bit more than that, and David Moyes and Sam Allardyce were given their marching orders during the week.
Well, they're rewarding them very well as well, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true, that, yeah,
I think,
exactly.
I think Sam Allardyce might be walking away.
We're not shedding any tears.
Antonio Conte walking away with maybe a two-year compensation of $9 million. I think that the figures going around at the moment are about $6 million for Sam Allardyce, and I didn't actually realise as well that he had another year on his contract as well, so another year to serve. But not only just those two as well, though, Rob, you've got to remember as well, another manager went the last couple of days as well, which was Paul Lambert, Stoke City.
Absolutely, yeah. Unsurprising again, given their relegation.
Unsurprisingly. The only thing I would say before we talk about the other two managers with Paul is that he's a proven championship manager, and if you're looking to try and bounce back, you know, he done it with my one of my ex-teams, Norwich City, had a great season there and got them back into the Premier League. Carvajal as well, which was on the cards anyway at Swansea, has now left Swansea as well, and started off really, really well at Swansea and thought that they were going to get out of it, and then obviously fell short at the end. The pressures of the Premier League at the bottom is unbelievable. I think we got a little bit distracted away from the top because of everything what was happening at the bottom. And you mentioned two managers there, you know, Sam Allardyce and David Moyes, who probably when they walked into that job, to keep them both teams up in the Premier League, they would see that the job has been done. They've been successful, but now as a manager, you want to obviously kick on and make sure that you meet with the owners and the directors and see what plans they have for the summer as early as possible, because it's not just, you know, finishing the season and then sitting around a table and working out where we're going to go for pre-season and which players we're going to sign. It's a process, and the process would have been done probably go all the way back probably to about sort of like November, December time. And, they now find themselves unemployed again. No doubt that I think David Moyes, with the gossip that's going around as well, that he might be going back, possibility of going to Stoke City. Wouldn't be a bad appointment. But with Sam Allardyce, I think that the fans, the writing was on the wall for Sam because of the so-called survey that was going around with the Everton supporters. And I think that Sam knew, and then he's come out with his statement,
yep,
and said that, you know, he probably knew anyway that his days were numbered at Goodison Park. And I think that, you know, if you flip it to what the Arsenal story is at the moment, with a manager, possibly a different structure of coaching and management that's going to go in, long gone the days of Arsene Wenger and 20 plus years of management now. And you're right, it could be just a transition of maybe Arteta will get the job, I think, but they're just looking for the right backroom staff, the right high caliber backroom staff to obviously back him up. And I think that's the way that Everton will go, and I think that's the way West Ham will go. Pellegrini is being touted to go to West Ham. High caliber manager. Obviously won the Premier League as well with Manchester City. But it's tough. And I think, you know, this day and age, you mentioned about ex-players and possibly going into that role. Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira. You know, they're literally just getting a token phone call. You know, and I think that, you know, definitely, I think over the recent week as well, PSV? PSV is recently, their director of football has now gone into Everton. So Steve Walsh, who was there for the last 2 years, who came from the champions of Leicester City, has now departed Goodison as well. So there's major groundworks going on at Goodison Park. And you got to remember, Ronald Koeman came into that football club as very sort of like high stock, you know, after a great season at Southampton. Done okay the first year, what the kick on, spent an unbelievable amount of money as well at Everton Football Club, and it didn't work out. And now it's okay, somebody going in, but he's got a lot of dead wood to get out rid of. So is West Ham. They've got players in there they need to ship out, because the wages that some of these players are on, it must be incredible. So, you know, it's a process that all the clubs have to go through when the manager leaves, but they have to get it right, because if not, both those teams will find themselves at the bottom again next year.
Keen to get your thoughts on Mikel Arteta and whether you think he's a good appointment for Arsenal. But just on that subject of Sam Allardyce and David Moyes, CVR, how ambitious can a club like Everton or West Ham be when it comes to appointing a manager? What kind of name can they hope to attract? And what kind of football, realistically, can they hope to play as well? Because there's a pragmatism. It's always, I suppose, a striking a line between being pragmatic, being organised, getting results, and playing football that is going to keep fans entertained. And Sam Allardyce on this occasion has failed to do that. We see he's been ranked 20th, or at least Everton were ranked 20th, when it came to shots taken on goal in the entire Premier League. They were the most shot-shy side in the entire Premier League. And Allardyce's style is what has rankled so many fans. How ambitious, because when clubs gamble, it seems to me that when they do appoint a manager who tries to be expansive, they end up taking negative results and that manager ends up being sacked anyway.
I tell you what, I think out in the press this week, our good friend Jose Mourinho has said something very, very true. And he said, what do you consider entertaining football? I don't consider 6-0 entertaining football. I consider it 0-0 to the last 10 minutes.
Not his United team, that's for sure.
But Robbie, what I'm trying to say is all the fans want entertaining football, but the minute the results don't come with entertaining football, then what do they do? 9-1-1, Sam Allardyce, please come save our club from relegation. And Sam has done this year on year on year. To me, he's one of the smartest guys, because what he'll do now is he'll take the summer off. He'll go and surely relax in Marbella or wherever he's going to relax, and you'll get the phone call in December once again.
You think he will?
He will, of course he will.
Okay.
And he'll make himself another £6 million.
We've got to take a short break. When we come back, this conversation will continue. Sam Allardyce's bank balance is in no trouble whatsoever. We've established that. The Royal Wedding is breaking out into song, and we'll be talking sport when we come back.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are reaching the moment of truth when it comes to the royal wedding, and it's difficult to keep the attention of Carl Van Rosenvelt and certainly Dale Gordon, because rings are being placed on fingers.
It doesn't fit, does it?
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's very difficult to concentrate here, Dale, especially for you. I know you can't keep your eye on more than one task at a time. A quick update in the IPL to bring you before we return to talking all things football. Rajasthan Royals have lost a couple of wickets, but they are 103-3 after 13 overs of their match, their all-important match, I should add, against the Royal Challengers Bangalore. They've also lost the wickets of Rahane for 33, and Sampson was out for a duck. First ball was Sampson, Bold Yadav and Court Ali. So Klassen and Tripathi are in bat at the moment, and the Rajasthan Royals 103-3 as things stand. We've been debating the decisions to remove Sam Allardyce and David Moyes from their positions at Everton and West Ham, respectively, Carl Van Rosenvelt. You believe, or at least you just said off air, that David Moyes is finished as a Premier League manager, but Big Sam will reappear from his extended holiday in the Barbados, and he will take on a new struggling club, around about Christmas time. Is that your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I just think that Allardyce somehow seems to bring in the structures that's needed to save a club. You know, he's done it year on year on year with all the various clubs. But I think it's quite important, Robbie, that it seems that every club has got this idea of we want to build, we want to play attractive football, and all of a sudden they find themselves 8 games in and in the bottom 3 of the league, and then all of a sudden they bring in a guy like Sam Allardyce. Crystal Palace did the same with, his name escapes me now.
Roy Hodgson.
With Roy Hodgson. They bring in, call it the older troopers. They put in these structures, and all of a sudden the team gets saved, because at the end of the day, it's big, big, big money for them. So I think Sam Allardyce, as you say, almost probably take his royal holiday, if we can call it as such, and a club struggling will be calling on him come January or December this year. So David Moyes, I think... His track record, his resume at the moment is not looking good.
If you submitted that CV to a potential employer, they'd look at it and go, hang on a minute, there's some gaps here.
He's jumping a bit. He's a bit of a jumper.
Yeah. The only thing I'd say with David Moyes, though, is, and we know Everton...
He did what he was required to do.
Yeah, he'd done a great... Look, he'd done a good job at Everton, you know, and I think the Manchester United job was obviously a bridge too far for him. Stepped out of the game, went over to Spain Real Sociedad.
Sociedad,
and then came
that
back.
That was a disaster.
Another disaster was obviously Sunderland as well. And mind you, Sunderland have been a disaster for a few years, haven't they? And now they find themselves in League One after probably, I think, about another 3 or 4 managers as well since David Moyes. And he's gone back into West Ham, got the opportunity to go into West Ham with a group of players that, let's be honest with you, like our average players. And I wouldn't say they're great players or they're world-class players, you know. There was the saga, obviously, with Dimitri Payet as well, which didn't help their cause as well under Slaven Bilic. And let's be honest with you, I think he'd done a decent job to keep him in the Premier League. You know, with the players that Slaven had, I think Slaven had the problems of a lot of injuries at West Ham at the time when he was going through his problems. They brought David Moyes in. There was a time when... it looked a little bit suspect if they were going to survive as well, because they went through some horrible results. But I think that the writing on the wall for David Moyes was the result they had at Wigan in the FA Cup. Because like we obviously FA Cup final day today, it's important that those sides that are, you know, not going to win the Premier League, not going to get into the Champions League, fighting against relegation, do have a good cup run as well. Breeds confidence throughout the whole football club. And I think that... there was also a heavy result as well against, I think it might have been Manchester City or someone at the top, where they lost quite heavily the game after. And I think that was probably the decision then was made by the board that, you know, if we survive here, that we need to probably look for somebody with a little bit more high calibre, because the West Ham supporters have gone through it. That's without a shadow of a doubt. Didn't help the supporters invade the pitch. Didn't help the football club, actually, West Ham, moving to the London Stadium as well, because they think there's a bit of a lack of atmosphere. But when I look at that stadium, I look at stadiums abroad in Italy, you know, I look at the Rome, you know, where Lazio play and Roma play, there's an awful lot of dead space, should we call it, behind the goal with a running track there. So why can't West Ham seem to create the same atmosphere that... Look at the atmosphere of 70,000 people created when we saw Roma play Liverpool. Unbelievable atmosphere. But that, unfortunately, for some reason, that stadium just doesn't give off the same vibe. Maybe it's because the supporters are so cheesed off with what's actually happening on the pitch as well. They're all leaving the ground after half-time anyway. So, you know, David Moyes will now go into a job. He'll come away. He'll enjoy his summer, you know, with a nice little pay packet. And I think that...
You expect to see him in the Premier League again?
I expect him to see him in the Championship, not the Premier League. I think he can go into a job in the Championship. Wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't get the Stoke job. He's the favourite to get it at the moment. So obviously Paul Lambert now leaving Stoke. So maybe that's an area where I wouldn't say that if I had a choice of the two managers to get them out of the Championship, Stoke City that is, do you choose David Moyes or do you go with somebody who's been there and seen it and done it in the Championship, and that is Paul Lambert? I'd probably go for Paul Lambert.
The interminable merry-go-round continues, Carl Van Roosevelt. Look, that is David Moyes, and I mean, given the fact that he went to Manchester United, his stock has fallen significantly, and you do wonder whether we'll ever see David Moyes back in charge of a Premier League club again. But a club that are determined to do things differently is Arsenal. Now, they have had the opportunity to appoint someone like Carlo Ancelotti following the news that Arsene Wenger would be leaving the Emirates come the end of this season. A decision which has emerged this week that he is still not processed fully. He is still in shock, is Arsene Wenger, and still speaking quite candidly about the way he was treated in that final season, not just by the club, but by the fans as well. But looking forward, they seem to be taking this more left field, this new direction with the name Mikel Arteta. We understand is very close. If he wants it, then the job is his for the taking. And it is a risk, isn't it? Because this is a huge season for Arsenal in transition. Now, it's not like Manchester United with Sir Alex Ferguson leaving and David Moyes taking on an already successful club. Arsenal have not had success in the league for a long time now, so there's an opportunity for a new manager to do things a bit differently. That being said, Arsene Wenger ran the club as his club for 22 years, and now there's this sort of structure of power sharing going on with Mikel Arteta, if he does get the job, absorbed into a role which has four or five other individuals making decisions. What's your interpretation of that, and does it make sense to you what Arsenal are doing?
I think what's important is who's going to be in the back office as such, because I kind of get the impression that they want the back office to run the club, and that's why I don't want to call Mikel Arteta weak, but they want a front man that's not going to ask too many questions and doesn't want to be the boss, if you know what I'm trying to say. Because I think if you look at the structure that they're trying to put together, that definitely seems that they don't want to give the front man or the face of the club all the decisions, like, for example, a Jose Mourinho demands, a Pep Guardiola demands, a Arsene Wenger demands. Because to me, if I look at Arsenal, that's a massive, massive football club. They're at that transition stage now where they need to start producing results. You know, it's the second year running that they're not being in the Champions League. They need to get back in the Champions League. They need to start contesting for the English Premier League. And to me, if I look at his credentials, I don't think he quite has the qualities yet to be an Arsenal manager.
Okay. Dale Gordon, your take on it? I mean, Mikel Arteta, Pep Guardiola has spoken in glowing terms about the work that he's done, particularly with some of the younger players at Manchester City. Leroy Sané has developed in leaps and bounds. Raheem Sterling has come on after some struggles in his early part of his Manchester City career. And Pep Guardiola has credited Mikel Arteta with bringing those kind of players on. But then it's a whole different kettle of fish when you're running a club, when you're the manager of a club like Arsenal with so much expectation. We know what pressure the fans put on Wenger to leave. How patient are they going to be, do you think, with the new man in charge?
Oh, good question. I think that with Wenger leaving, and I think that, you know, the possibility of Arteta coming in, I think only thing I'd say, Rob, is that I do like the way, like his body language on the bench. You know, he's not as a number two. I know they're normally seen in the background and not seen by the ones that would be jumping around and voicing their opinions and doing post-match interviews. You know, that's down to the manager. But we've seen with other football clubs that sometimes the number two does come out into the press and does a talk. With Arteta, he hasn't done that. And I just looked at the celebrations as well. The last game of the season, when they played Southampton, they nicked it with Jesus scored in the, I think it was the 94th minute, to get to 100 points, and everybody was going crazy and jumping around. And I looked at Arteta, and he just was the most coolest man in that stadium. You know, no emotion on his face. I'm not saying there with any signs there, but I think that Arteta going into Arsenal Football Club, would he be given time? Yes, but also as what's given time. I think Arsenal, with the history of Arsene Wenger having a manager there for 20-odd years, they're going to give somebody the opportunity to... I think that sort of football club. But, like I said, I think Arteta, it's important. I think the job is his. I believe the job is his. But I think to bring in a very, very high calibre of backroom staff, which I mentioned at the top of the show, is where the key is. I think that's the only stumbling block at the moment, because obviously it's okay agreeing a contract. You're sitting there with the board of directors and the chief exec and your agent, and they say, right, you're going to be on $5 million a year, and if you get a bonus for this, you shake his hand straight away. But there's a lot more that goes into, obviously, the backroom side of it as well. And that is the only stumbling block I see. If he gets it right with his backroom staff, I think Arsenal Football Club will have a good season next year. A good season is to finish in the top four, maybe finishing fourth.
You think they can do that?
No. No, I don't. But that, you asked me the question. I think that if they finished fourth, as a starting block for, you know, for Mikel Arteta would be a good season, because the thing is, they're back in the Champions League and they're somewhere they haven't been the last 2 years.
Okay, well, that is the thoughts there of Dale Gordon, and as I understand it, the new structure at Arsenal will be similar to that of Chelsea. I wonder whether they will be looking for a new manager come the end of the FA Cup final. Antonio Conte refusing to speculate on his future. Everyone else is, though, and Antonio Conte very much considered to be in charge of his last game at Chelsea for the FA Cup final, which is, of course, this evening, Wembley at 8:15 p.m. When we come back, the sporting conversation will continue. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
We're talking live sport with you. It's Robbie, Carl Van Rosenvelt and Dale Gordon all the way through until 6 p.m. this evening in Barasti at the Rooftop Garden, where the game is always on. We are not looking at the continuing scenes of the royal wedding. The bunting is out down here at Barasti. It's a wonderful scene, but we are focused solely on the world of sport, Dale Gordon, and you have an update for us from La Liga.
Yeah, I mentioned that Levante were 1-0 up halfway through the first half. In the sunshine in Celta, new football shirts out there. We're obviously sporting their shirts for next season, but also as well, Celta Vigo want to finish the season off on a high, and they've responded, Robbie, as well, with two goals in the last 15 minutes of the first half. First one coming on 30 minutes, and the second one to make it 2-1 on 42. So at the moment, it's Celta Vigo 2, Levante 1.
Live rugby ongoing, Carl Van Rosenvelt.
Yeah, the first game of their Viva semi-finals, of course, this is for their Viva Premiership title. It's Saracens taking on Wasps. And what I can tell you is Saracens are off to a fantastic start. 16 minutes played, two tries, one by Alex Lewiski, another by Vincent Koch, converted by that man, Owen Farrell. Saracens 14, Wasps 0.
If you've got any thoughts at all on the world of sport, get in touch with us on 4001. You can join the conversation. Abdul has done just that. He has said, or he has claimed, that Mikel Arteta will be mid-table for Arsenal if he joins. In other words, he does not believe that Mikel Arteta will be a success at Arsenal Football Club. I do feel like they're on a bit of a precipice, Arsenal, that there's a danger that they could slide into, I won't say mid-table mediocrity, but they're already cut adrift from the established top four, and this is a big, big couple of years for them, and obviously the importance on choosing the right man to lead them forward is absolutely paramount. But I want to leave club football there for just a moment, if we can, because some huge stories emerging during the week as we count down to the start of the FIFA World Cup in Russia. We're 25 days away now, Carl Van Rosenvelt, and a quite extraordinary story emerged a little bit earlier on this week. It involved none other than Michel Platini, who is, of course, the disgraced former president of UEFA, a man who is currently serving a ban from involvement in all footballing matters because of the fact that he received a disloyal payment from another man who is very disgraced when it comes to all things football, Sepp Blatter and FIFA. He has made the claim a little bit earlier on this week, Carl, that the trickery, a little trickery, to use his exact phrase, was used back in 1998 to ensure that France and Brazil did not meet until the final. Now, the quotes, and I will read them to you here, he says, when we organised the schedule, we did a little trickery. He was speaking to the France Bleu Sport radio station. He said, France-Brazil was in the final. Well, that was the dream of everyone. If we finished first in the group and Brazil finished first, we could not meet before the final. He went on, we did not spend 6 years organising the World Cup to not do some little shenanigans. Do you think other World Cup hosts did not?
Skullduggery is the word he used, Robbie Greenfield. But this guy, does he have no end to him or end to his shame? And you know what? It just makes me question the whole 98 World Cup, because if I look at France's group that they got drawn in, Denmark, South Africa, and Saudi Arabia, of course they're going to end up top. Come on.
Yeah, it was a nice, easy group for them, that's for sure. They still had to go and win the tournament. They still had to beat Brazil 3-0 in the final. And, of course, they were worthy champions in the end. Zinedine Zidane inspiring that team to success in the 1998 final. 20 years ago, in fact, nearly to the day. But, I mean, where does this leave football? The FIFA and UEFA and the likes of Blatter and Platini have already been so widely discredited. We don't need to do any further discrediting, but it really does make you question what has gone on in the last, 20, 30 years when it comes to the governance of world football, because where does the corruption stop?
Exactly. And, you know, after reading this article this morning about El Platini, I started thinking, of course, there was that big issue surrounding Ronaldo back then before the 98 final that they...
You think Michel slipped something into his drink or something?
It doesn't surprise me, to be perfectly honest with you, Robbie. You know, you start asking all these various questions, but I think it's an absolute shame. It just makes me question FIFA more and the execs. It makes me now confirm that the decision that they did banning Platini was really too short a time. Because to me, you cannot have... whatever you want to call it, sluggery, rigging or whatever, you cannot have this in football.
Dale? Well, lots of sour grapes. I think it's amazing, isn't it, that we've now, 30-odd days away from the World Cup and...
25,
you know,
Dale.
25. And Michel Platini is coming out with these, you know, accusations or views about it. And I think that it's just sour grapes. I think, you know, just them two just need to, like, seriously take a back step and just let everyone just get on with the... you know, enjoying the World Cup, where everyone's looking forward to Russia.
Let me ask you this question.
And this sort of like has put a massive cloud on the whole thing.
Are you confident that the tournament, the World Cup in Russia, will be run in a fair and unbiased manner?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do, actually, Robbie. And I think the only thing fair and unbiased will probably be VAR. So, you know, but that's an opinion that, you know, which has been brought into the game now. And I think... fair and an unbiased way we will see regards to some of the decisions that will be made throughout the World Cup and the month of the World Cup. But yeah, I think it will run quite smoothly and I hope it's going to be an excellent spectacle.
We've seen, just on staying on the World Cup, some stories come out involving the announcement of England's squad during the week. A lot of other teams making their announcement, but England, who have not covered themselves in any glory whatsoever in the last 10 years of the competition, not just in the World Cup, but also in the European Championships as well. A couple of their players taking to social media to have their say, to voice their discontent at not being selected for the World Cup. Jack Wilshere has been one of those, and Joe Hart, the former England number one goalkeeper who did play a part and did play a role in the qualification process, has also... said how displeased he is. Now, we'll get the thoughts there of them in a minute, but here's Gareth Southgate speaking about the reasons for omitting long-time England number one, Joe Hart, from the World Cup squad.
He's been a big part of England's team in the last few years. He's been a really good, valued member of the squad. But, of course, in the end, I've got to look at the performances over the course of the last 18 months with players' clubs. Various things that go in your mind as a manager when you're picking a team and picking a squad. And in the end, the three lads we've picked have been the three best goalkeepers in the league this year, English goalkeepers. So not a conversation he wanted to have or I wanted to have, but they're the calls you have to make as a manager.
How did he take the news?
Very professionally. Of course, disappointed, as was Ryan Bertrand when I spoke to him. You know, both of those two have been involved in the qualifying matches, but both very professional, there's not a lot more you can say at those moments for those players. Hopefully get the chance to pick up with them and talk to them in a bit more detail at a later point, because I know as a player that disappointment, it's good then to maybe talk it through in a few months' time.
Is the door now closed for Joe, or do you think there's a chance that he could play for England again sometime in the future?
No, absolutely. I've picked players on form, and if he's playing well for his club, why wouldn't we select him? So there's no reason that has to be the end. He's got important career decision this summer, and you know, we hope he can resolve that smoothly and he can be back playing at his very best.
Gareth Southgate, England manager there, and Joe Hart took to social media in the last couple of days to say, not going to lie, I'm gutted. After 2 years of trying to make the most of a really tough situation, this is hard to take. I'm proud to have put in the graft and play every minute to qualify with the team and have a really important input in that outcome. I know what I bring to the team, but it is what it is. Good luck to the team out there. The players know that even though I won't be there, I will have my England shirt on as a fan this time and supporting all the way. Jack Wilshere, the midfielder, came out with a similar sentiment. He says on Twitter, he's come out and said, think it's about time I had my say. It goes without saying that I'm naturally incredibly disappointed to have been left out of the England squad for the World Cup. I've felt fit, sharp and strong all season and believe I should be in the squad. given the chance, I could have made a real impact. Dale Gordon, just quickly before we break for the news headlines, do you believe that these guys should, is this unsettling to the team? Should they be able to have their say on social media? And really, can either of them have that many complaints as to being left out?
Well, everybody's entitled to their opinion, Robin. I think that, you know, footballers do go to social media and express their, you know, their highs and their lows throughout the season. I think that in the case of Joe Hart, you know, it's been obviously evident with his performances at West Ham that with Adrian going back in goals as well, and he played really, really well. So it was difficult to get Adrian out of, you know, at the first team at West Ham. And I think even when he was thrown back in later on in the season, that his performances weren't at the level that maybe an England manager would trust, you know, in the sticks at a World Cup finals. And I think with Jack, he says that he's fit and he's ready and he's played, but I don't think he's played enough games. I don't think he's proved his fitness. And I think there's players in the same area in the middle of the park that have played, you know, week in, week out at a high level, without getting injured or picking up a little niggling injury. And I think from his point of view, it's more of the fact that if he takes him, is it another risk that he might pick up an injury?
There you go, there, the thoughts there of Dale Gordon. That's the England squad. We'll be talking more World Cup as we count down to the finals in Russia. When we come back, though, we are likely, or I hope, to be joined, and this depends rather on whether he has reception. He is en route to Wembley Stadium. Ron Atkinson, the former Manchester United manager who won two FA Cups with the Old Trafford club back in 83 and 85. Hopefully, fingers crossed, Ron will be on the phone when we come back.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.